Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, folks. On 870 AM, you can hear Pelicans pre-game coverage of their preseason matchup against the Houston Rockets. Meanwhile, coming up over on 105.3 FM after us at 7 p.m., the Saints Hour, Mike Haas will be with you, the voice of the black and gold, joining you for the whole hour. Saints Hour, don't miss that, coming up at 7 p.m. Right now, time, though, for Fantasy Focus. For that, we welcome in Joe Bartle, fantasy football expert at RotoWire. Joe, how the heck you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's kind of a bleak waiver wire period, and unfortunately for a lot of folks here coming up, week 8 and week 9, you're going to have 10 teams on bye over that two-week stretch. So with all the injuries happening, we've gotten to that point in the NFL season where there isn't a one-for-one solution. It's just, here's a conglomerate of people. Hopefully you figure it out, and we never do, and it never seems to matter week to week either. So it's a frustrating stretch, that's for sure.
Joe, I was devastated with the London game this past weekend. You know, Courtland Sutton stock, Garrett Wilson stock, nobody could throw the football, especially the Jets, who, you know, finished a game in the year of our Lord 2025 with negative 10 net passing yards. Unbelievable. I want to get your thoughts, though. Garrett Wilson's apparently going to be out for a couple of weeks with that hyperextended knee. I mean, you just kind of abandon the Jets really at that point, right? Because Garrett Wilson's basically been their passing attack.
Can I interest you in somebody you're very familiar with and Mason Taylor? I mean, okay. It's not a massive sell. I'll be very clear. I loved Mason Taylor coming out of college. I thought there was actually a lot of smoke to him being a late first round pick. And of course, ends up going in the first couple picks of the second round, which was reflective of a guy that I thought could be a, we'll call him for lack of a better term, a three down specialist for a tight end. Like we have those running backs that can do everything that Mason Taylor could do. Now the only issue in fantasy is typically that then means they just end up blocking because they'll go to a bad team. They won't use him as a pass catcher. My hope was rookie year Sam Laporta with maybe half as many touchdowns. And we probably won't even get to the half as many touchdowns because the Jets' offense is so bad. But I do think it's possible Mason Taylor elevates to be a better pass catcher for the Jets and be the best one. Now, it's again, the Jets could go ahead and trade for a receiver. That would be like the dumbest decision I could imagine possible. But if they really are trying to see what happens more with Justin Fields in this offense, you can't do that with Alan Lazard and Josh Reynolds. So like they have to have something. I think Mason Taylor is the obvious guy that will get more involved. And again, it's in a 12-team league, you're maybe considering Mason Taylor as like the 10th tight end or 11th tight end in a full-point PPR. It's not like an obvious situation, but whereas you would normally say just get rid of every single Jet, I do understand that premise. I think Mason Taylor, at least for the little value that he costs, is one I would look at.
Joe, I look like a stud to my teenage son this past week. He was looking for running back help, and I suggested picking up Kamani Vidal over Hassan Haskins. That ended up being the right play there. Looking now for some other running back help out there, what do you feel like a guy in the Arizona Cardinals in Bam Knight? Is this someone worth rostering?
Yeah, let's put into context. I think Kamani Vidal was an awesome call. Great work on that one. The Chargers made it more difficult than it had to, in my mind, at least throughout the week, because we had Daniel Popper, who I believe is one of the best reporters, at least from a team perspective, working for The Athletic. And Daniel Popper talked about Hassan Haskins being the next guy up. And then you had Greg Roman saying, well, both Kamani Vidal and Hassan Haskins are getting involved. It's like, guys, Kamani Vidal is clearly better. Like, what are we doing here? And thankfully, right, we saw that transpire actually on the football field now. It was against one of the league's worst defenses, especially against the run in the Dolphins. I don't think it quite transpires again this week, but you play Vidal in most scenarios. And I'm saying that because I would rather have Kamani Vidal over Bam Knight, over Michael Carter, any of the flavor of the week du jour running backs, maybe Woody Marks was also dropped during the Texans bye week, for example. Like, I think, as a Packer fan, the Packers defense has been very disappointing the past month now or so, but I do think they'll be stout against a guy like Bam Knight, who really feels like, to me, only a guy that runs up the middle. I think Michael Carter is going to be far more valuable in that match against the Cardinals, and it could even get worse if Kyler Murray doesn't play again. And I think he might not play because the Cardinals are on a bye the following week after. So to me, Kamani Vidal over Bam Knight's a no-brainer. I'd rather play Vidal, and I think I'd rather have like Tajay Spears, over Bam Knight as well, too. And, you know, again, probably even Woody Marks as well.
You know, one player that I think has gotten off to a slowish start, and he was so unbelievable this past year. So, you know, it's his expectations are higher than everyone else. Saquon Barkley, who's the number 13 ranked running back in PPR leagues and those formats, the matchup against the Giants, it just feels like, you know, Joe, to be honest, what happened with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith both kind of crying about their lack of production in the passing game, it feels like maybe the new OC of Philadelphia is trying to overthink things. I know that Saquon's also been dealing with some kind of injury bug as well, but just kind of your overall thoughts on Saquon Barkley. Obviously, for anyone that took first-round stock into him like I did, we're going to continue to start him, but the slow start is a little bit concerning.
It's so funny. I think let's tackle this in two ways, because you mentioned the key part for me. Saquon Barkley is running back 13 in ESPN scoring formats right now. If you told me that the guy I'm drafting in the first round was going to be near top 10 in this position, you wouldn't be happy about it, but you're like, okay, you know, that's fine. I mean, rookie year Bijan Robinson was a perfect example where he ended up, I think, finishing like right at running back 11 or 10, and people are drafting him fourth or fifth overall. And people will be upset and hold that against him. But the reality was, as a tough situation, he was a rookie, still ends up getting pretty good value, and the hype just got out of control. With all the injuries, and especially ineffective play, that's the worst part of it for those late first-round guys, even like CeeDee Lamb or Justin Jefferson, who have been affected by either injuries or injuries to their quarterbacks. Like, the guys you're considering around Saquon Barkley outside of Christian McCaffrey haven't hit either. So it's funny that you are not the only one, but there are other people upset about it too. The Kevin Petullo offensive coordinator for the Eagles part of things with A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith is absolutely the correct thing. Like, you are hitting it right on the nose. I have a four-year-old that I feel like I am dealing with on a minute-by-minute basis. I will take him to and from school. I'll talk with my wife about things that matter in life. And it does not matter, because the four-year-old, when he wants to talk, will tell you he needs to talk, interrupting, whatever. And maybe there's better parenting skills that I could be deploying right now, but that's exactly the point. Kevin Petullo, the offensive coordinator, probably should be doing better parenting, or at least managing his star receivers and the running back, saying, no, I understand you guys are frustrated with winning football games. We want to have Saquon Barkley involved. That is the backbone of our entire team, is having Saquon Barkley do what he did this past year. I would rather get that right than you guys, and hopefully if I do get Saquon Barkley right, then I can have A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith also be a factor. That has not happened. And to me, it's just incredibly bad coaching, managing the situation. Nick Sirianni, same thing as well, too. You'd think he'd probably step in at some point, and yet has yet to do so. There isn't an answer. You're playing Saquon Barkley. I think if you're doing like a rest of season question, I think Saquon Barkley, I would still probably draft, if we were doing a draft today, probably in the second or third round, because it has to turn around, because how can it not? But this is a certainly frustrating situation, as it is trying to tell a four-year-old to stop talking over the parents.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Joe, if I'm looking for wide receiver help out there, should I turn to Buccaneers wide out Tez Johnson, someone that, you know, it doesn't seem to matter who Baker Mayfield's been throwing the ball to lately, dealing with a number of injuries over there, just getting the job done, and if wondering if Tez Johnson can be a legit producer in my fantasy lineup?
Yeah, sure. Tez Johnson, Cameron Johnson, Sterling Shepard, Cade Otton, all these really important fantasy names that we were all expecting entering the year. And I mean, no, I joke about it, but goodness, this is going to be a frustrating thing. And the worst part about this is the Buccaneers are against what should be the primest of prime matchups in this Detroit secondary, who probably will lose Brian Branch for being stupid as well against the right. Chiefs. Like, this should be a spot for Baker Mayfield to throw for 500 yards. And if that is correct, if we are all assuming that Baker Mayfield can rise above everything, all the circumstances once more, maybe the answer is everyone. But I have a really hard time figuring out, especially if Mike Evans eventually makes his return after a multi-game absence due to hamstring injury, what that looks like. And is Emeka Buka officially out? We've heard week to week. I assume he will be. It's just really tough when we're making waivers today to say, okay, well, if we think Chris Godwin's out and we think Emeka Buka's out and we think Mike Evans will be there, How does Sterling Shepard play into this? Does Tez Johnson, I'm getting the work like we've seen the past couple weeks. I would lean towards Tez over Cameron Johnson. Cameron Johnson got more receptions last week, but he's been primarily the team's special team. He's been primarily the team's returner. And more importantly, Cameron Johnson only got the bump in snaps this past week when they had the Emekabuka injury, whereas Tez Johnson has been playing more the past couple weeks. That's the one that I'm kind of speculating on. But frankly, if I can get him after waivers are processed, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday night, whatever it is, as opposed to going for like a priority fab or putting fab on it overall, that's what I would choose to do, because I think there's so much uncertainty with the Buccaneers and only two teams on bye. Theoretically, it's just Zay Flowers among the receivers that you're losing, or I guess Khalil Shakir. Like, there shouldn't be an emphasis that are needed to get waiver wire receivers. And I think I would do my best to try to avoid the situation if possible.
You know, Joe, as we enter kind of the midway part of the season, are there any kind of players that you're looking at different rosters in your league and saying, I need to kind of get on this guy now because I think he can kind of shoot up in the second half of the season? Maybe not necessarily buy low candidates, players that have even played decently well, but you just really want them on your roster in the second half of the season, no matter what it costs.
Yeah, I think the question is always better asked, especially after we get through Bye-mageddon, which has six teams on bye, and that's week eight. Like, I can't prioritize targeting people rest of season when I'm struggling to start people on a weekly basis. So really the answer for me is Derrick Henry. And I know it's not quite an easy answer, because typically the person that has Derrick Henry drafted him highly, therefore isn't willing to move him. They had to wait through this whole stretch of Lamar Jackson being out, probably gets him back week eight. But that is the key for me. Like, I'll pay not quite what the Derrick Henry premium was when you drafted him, but I will go ahead and give up good draft capital, or I guess I'll give up good roster capital, with the Derrick Henry buy being done and theoretically the Ravens offense up. Like, the people that drafted Derrick Henry have to be upset with this experience thus far. That wasn't what they're signing up for. And Derrick Henry's been healthy. Like, you can remain steadfast as much as you want, but this has been a frustrating month now. And I do think there are going to be low opportunities still within that Ravens offense, but with Lamar Jackson back, with the Ravens basically playing for their playoff lives here in October at this point, I think Derrick Henry is going to be one of those that gets the volume, gets the workload, and I would be very happy to go ahead and trade for basically what was his draft cost.
Yeah. And, Joe, one last one from me. The fact you look at streaming options for defenses in Week 7, it's always difficult to know what's on, you know, different people's waiver wires out there. But just curious for some matchups that might intrigue you that could be that are usually out on the waiver wires that folks can pick up for defense-wise.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. This is a brutal week to stream defenses, and I do it almost exclusively. Last week, I streamed both the Titans and Raiders in various leagues. Like, that's how bleak it was. Wow. I think it's a similar sort of spot this week, too. Unfortunately, if the Packers are somehow available, you'd obviously want them against the Cardinals. I don't know if that ends up happening. I don't mind the Steelers against the Browns, for example, but a lot of people have the Steelers as well, too. And you're also losing the Bills, which people are often starting, so there's another team that probably wants a streaming defense. It's not a great answer. I really isn't, but unfortunately, I think the answer is nobody among the obvious streaming candidates, and it might be more on a league-to-league basis.
Gotcha. Always appreciate the time, Joe. What can folks find? I see your waiver wire article up at RotoWire, but what else can the folks get up out there?
Yeah, I did get the updates in earlier today. Luther Burden was probably the beneficiary of DJ Moore, but we can read all about those on my Twitter, JB Fantasy Sports. And I have my big betting sheet coming out tomorrow. Pick every game against the spread, every game as well as the totals too. Been okay, about 500. If nothing else, you can read some quippy things about how much I hate the Titans.
I appreciate the time, Joe. Always awesome insights. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Bartle, fantasy football expert at RotoWire, joining us there. You can follow him on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at JB Fantasy Sports, also at RotoWire.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.